You're listening to a classic business podcast as heard on Classic 1027. 1027. This is Classic Business with Michael Avery on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
Welcome to COVID-19 Business Watch. We're talking about one of the so-called softer issues. It really isn't at the moment. With some 2.6 billion people around the world in some kind of lockdown, we are conducting arguably the largest psychological experiment in human history. The World Economic Forum recently warned that this will result in a secondary epidemic of burnouts and stress-related absenteeism in the latter half of this year and into 2021. The average South African working from home is currently putting more than the required hours at the desk in. In fact, if you're like me, you work from home. It's meant working longer hours than ever because the line between work and home has become so blurred. And besides that, we're juggling two other jobs in the day, which includes the teacher's job and the job of a domestic worker as well. And add to that the financial uncertainty of this fragile economy, coupled with the pervasive sense of isolation, which is all exacerbated by restrictions on movement. It makes this moment unprecedented and different from any other economic downturn in recent history. So the mental burden is so heavy that it's creating a second major public health scare alongside the deadly pandemic. So how do we deal with this? What are the signs that we are on the edge of what sort of precipice you might want to call this, and what tools can we use to avoid burnout related to stress? Obviously, taking action now will help mitigate some of the negative effects of COVID-19 lockdowns on business and employees. And with that, we have assembled a Zoom panel on the back of Business for South Africa webinar. Let's welcome firstly Business for South Africa's Judy Nokwedi, who's also the COO of Tourvest and Secretary General of the Black Business Council, Professor Garth Stevens, President of the Psychological Society of South Africa, Richard Sutton, a health and performance educator and a consultant who's advised top athletes from the likes of Maria Sharapova to the Chinese Olympic team, and he's also a consultant to leading companies on stress resilience and employee engagement and productivity, and Cassie Chambers, the head of operations at SADAG, which is the SA Depression and Anxiety Group. Thanks for joining us, all of you. Professor Stevens, one can't deny that many South Africans are finding themselves spiraling down a hole of despair from what's going on around them, and stress is a natural reaction. How does it impact your mind, your body, and your work at this time?
Well, thanks. Thanks, Michael. I think that what one has really got to understand is that there are a number of really visible forms of mental health consequences to this moment. And those include things like public anxieties about one's safety, the safety of one's loved ones. Of course, we've seen increases in the kinds of ideas of psychiatric and mental health admissions. We see higher levels of depression and anxiety more broadly, and of course this is going to be exacerbated by increased unemployment rates, in some instances reaching up to 50%. In addition to that, of course, you're also seeing the possibility of increased levels of suicidality and a general social malaise associated with restrictions on mobility and social contact today. And of course, in addition to that, for those of us who have the opportunity to work remotely, there are, of course, all kinds of problems associated with remote working that one has to take into account as well, impacting on productivity, impacting on the separation of work and home life, and so on.
And Cassie, if we look at this mental illness, especially depression, increases the risk of so many other physical health problems. It's often a lead stressor that leads to other health problems. What is the data telling us about the extent of the problem currently?
I think we're still monitoring on a daily basis. What we at SADAG can say from the call that we're receiving and people reaching out is our call volumes have doubled since lockdown. And that's really concerning. Before, we were receiving about 600 calls per day. We're now sitting at 1,200 to 1,400 calls per day from people across the country who are feeling overwhelmed and anxious. And I think we forget that mental health issues have both an emotional or mental symptoms as well as physical symptoms. And if we don't deal with the issues and deal with the mental health problems, they could have profound risks and consequences later on.
And this at a time when we should be strengthening our immune systems. Richard, stress in the world of high-performance athletes is actually a positive. It's something that athletes have to deal with on a daily basis, performing at center court, for example. Just talk to me about how you approach dealing with both the positive sides of stress and obviously the negative sides.
Well, that's a good way of putting it. And When we experience stress in the short term, we have this upregulation of multiple systems within the body. Four major systems unify, they come together. It helps us be more agile, adapt, and overcome very challenging circumstances. And all this takes place in a very short period of time, and hopefully infrequently. But we're in a situation now where we're in this chronic state where the stresses are relentless and the cloud is not lifting, so to speak. And instead of something that can facilitate our growth and achievement and create new opportunities for us, that is the stress response. The stress response has a very destructive, negative effect. It can overengage our immune system, so it can cause an increase in inflammation. It can create immunosuppression. It can create digestive disorders. It can create renal disorders. It creates a whole recalibration of our biological state that can obviously impact our health in the short term and very much so in the long term.
And with that, one needs to be able to recognize when you're under these incredible stresses and develop some strategies and tools to deal with them. And we'll come to those. Judy, from business's perspective, I think it's manifesting in a number of interesting ways. And you can look at the stress from the shop floor level, from the worker's perspective, and the stress that they're enduring, not knowing whether or not their jobs are secure and what they have to deal with in terms of a very altered power dynamic with management. And at a management, executive or C-suite level, they're managing not only the decisions of whether or not they're going to be retrenching, but also having to deal with shareholders on the other side as well. From a business perspective, how are you seeing all of this manifest itself?
The word at the moment is, when is Armageddon for many businesses? You go from one area of supply chain, which is seeing incredible growth in terms of the digital space online. If you look at Zoom, the platform we're using, their growth has been beyond exponential, from a universe of X hundred, I can't remember the exact stats, but today Zoom, the share price of Zoom it's one of the best stocks, if you put it in that sense. So there's that side of the business world. The manufacturers of disinfectants, PPE equipment, etc., business is booming for them, and of course in every crisis there is a new opportunity. However, you go to the other side of the business world, like tourism, a sector that I'm in, overnight the sector imploded. So you really have extremes, and then you have those companies that straddle the middle road where they don't know when they will go back to work. So when we move from level 5 to level 4, the uncertainty that accompanies that adds to the pressures. But we also come off the back of very low levels of growth, a shrinking GDP, a economic outlook that was extremely bleak. So we've come off a bad footing. The pandemic could not have come at a worse time for South Africa. We've been downgraded repeatedly. We've been downgraded by international agencies. So the compounded impact of the contagion of this virus is unprecedented, and we are trying to model the net effect on the economy. So the stress and the effects across the board have multiplied. So when you look at your normal levels of mental disorder and disease, what we have found with the lockdown is that, obviously, I mean, I don't need to say this, I think we are all fully aware of the fact that South Africa has amongst the highest levels of gender-based violence. This has exacerbated. And if you add on the loss of income, then the expression of that sense of powerlessness by men in particular manifests itself in numerous ways, and violence not only against women. I think Garth eloquently talks about the violence that is contained in the home and in the community then spreading out, and large-scale rioting and unrest will become we already see this in many parts of the world, the levels of demonstrations, and in some countries, actually a standoff between frontline workers and communities. And we've not seen this kind of expression of anger. And it's just a matter of time that the casualties, not only from death and hunger, but casualties as a result of violence, extreme violence will also add to the mental health complexities and challenges.
Those social stresses that we might see manifesting in the workplace as well, already in a country with a very militant industrial relations history. But I want to come back to a point, and Professor Stevens, that Judy touched on there, and that is the impact of this current situation on the genders. Men obviously under a lot of stress and pressure, but I get the sense that women are probably under even more pressure at the moment, because not only are those women dealing with their career responsibilities at the moment, but they now also have to play teacher and home worker at the same time.
Yes, I mean, I think that that Judy's already pointed out to the fact that one of the invisible ways in which mental health is going to, or the mental health consequences of the pandemic and the lockdowns really going to manifest is through gender-based violence, but also violence against children. And of course, this is partly about people being in close proximity, escalated emotional tension, the difficulty managing relationships in homes, in tight spaces, that are probably in many instances under-resourced or less resourced than we'd like. So that's the angle for men in particular, but of course this is gendered in many other ways. And the fact of the matter is that the burden of care is likely to rest on the shoulders of women mainly. And the burden of care here is not only the burden of care for children, for schooling, for families, for the aged, for the frail, etc. But of course many of the women in South Africa are also finding themselves in sectors where they would be considered to be essential workers. And they would find themselves having to, at the same time as managing a home and all of these other elements, they'd still have to find themselves in a productive workspace as well.
So, Cassie, how do we start developing a framework to deal with this in firstly, a work environment where many of us are now working remotely? I think managers are having to deal with teams in remote locations, so you're Zooming or on Microsoft Teams, and perhaps not able to read the nonverbal cues that may indicate an employee suffering under the weight of depression, for example. How do we start developing a toolkit to equip managers to help identify an early identification of employees that are at high risk here?
And I think this is where it's key, is that we can use this time to really start empowering line managers, heads of departments, even colleagues about mental health in the workplace, what to look out for, how to have a conversation, what to say, what not to say. This is the time that we can really train and provide that feedback and really help them to learn what to do. Having connected conversations are really key. And as you mentioned, where we've gone on online and technical, we're working harder, longer, and under a lot more stress. You know, we keep on saying working from home, but we're working from home in a crisis. We're homeschooling in a crisis. And I think we have to also take that into consideration. Having open conversations and checking in with your staff. But we're using this time now to really help HR managers, line managers, learn as much as they can about mental health and how to support their staff. One of the things that we partnered with Business for South Africa is putting together guidelines about mental health in the workplace during COVID-19, whether you're managing staff from home and online, or especially with the different restrictions, and as we go from alert level 4 to alert level 3, more people are going back to the workplace, more people are going to be feeling anxious for different reasons. Now is the time to find out what resources are available, how to get your employees support now, and prevent a crisis from happening.
We're talking about the silent killer in workplaces around the world at the moment, and that is stress, not COVID-19, and certainly a lot of the stress that is being induced by the uncertainty and the levels of economic fragility that accompany this pandemic. Richard Sutton, how do we develop a framework at an executive management level to deal with this? I bumped into a CEO on my morning walk the other morning, and I've never seen him look as stressed as he was. He's dealing with all kinds of decisions, whether or not to let people go at a time of such economic uncertainty. You could see it was weighing on his shoulders now. What are some of the techniques and tools to help deal with stress of that nature at this time?
So there's a couple of pieces here. I think that we're beyond the point of just exercising and having green tea and watching our diet and a few of the other modalities that we could typically employ in shorter and less intense stress periods. At this point in time where we are subjected to an insurmountable amount of stress, the uncertainties, that's a major driver in stress, the lack of control that we have, the fact that a leader has to buffer the organization, basically he has to or she has to remove as many of the stresses that exist within the organization as possible in order to augment mental and emotional well-being within their employees. And they're 12 stresses that they've got to be fingers on, hands on all the time. And this burden, this weight really is something that, that will weigh down on leadership and managers. And one has to approach it very systematically. And there's a system-based approach which I've incorporated with CEOs, with management teams and broader organizations that's been very effective. And this is where I draw from professional sports. They're often subjected to uncertainties. Injuries could rule out their financial earnings for the rest of their lives. They're 28 years old. They've been in this situation many times. And they've overcome it through a variety of techniques and strategies. And this is what I want to share now. The first is really this mindset, the power of your mind. Having a growth mindset, seeing challenges as an opportunity to change and innovate and be the better version of yourself is amazing. When we reframe, when we see stress as something, a vehicle for positivity, not negativity, it really changes the biological effects on stress on our health and actually reduces a lot of the risk associated to chronic stress and also helps us in the cognition and attention and focus space. The second step beyond the reframing is that connectivity piece, is connecting to people close to you. There's a lot of biological reasons for this. A lot of people feel very vulnerable and disconnected in the way that we work or the manner that we're working at this particular point in time, and this is the time to reach out and connect, and it aids their lives and creates a support platform for them, and it helps them tremendously, especially if they have these vulnerabilities. But the most important thing is when we connect to other people, when we reach out, when we show empathy, care, compassion, and all these positive pro-social traits, we actually change our biological state. When we increase the levels and concentrations and the uptake of a hormone called oxytocin, which is a biological buffer for the stress hormones. Basically, what I'm saying is by reaching out and connecting to other people, we protect ourselves from the negative effects of stress. We're not changing the circumstance that we're confronted with, but we're changing our physical reality. The third step is the power of being able to control our biological state, that biological stress response. We're going to be stressed not once a day. We're going to be stressed almost all day for a number of different reasons, as all my colleagues have discussed and described. And in this state, it is a very exhausting. This hypervigilant state is draining, destructive, damaging on a way that we can't even begin to comprehend mentally, emotionally, physically. And we have to be able to gain control, gain mastery of our stress axes. And the way we do it is we tap into the off button. The body is ingenious. It has this incredible off switch. It's known as the vagus nerve. And when we tap into this within 30 seconds, the biological responses that we experience in stressful situations are shut down and modulated. And these activities include deep breathing exercises, yoga, meditation. All these alternate modalities and therapies are powerful in tapping into this valuable resource, and that is controlling stress at will. The fourth step is that rebuilding phase, knowing that when we are stressed, that is not when stress impacts us. We're actually most impacted when the stress has passed. Unfortunately, we're at a situation, at a point in human history where the stress is not going to pass for 12 months, 18 months, 2 years, possibly. We don't know. And this is creating this over-aroused state that is having a damaging effect, and there's no signs of relenting, or there's no sign of actually changing or turning around. And in this period, we have to focus on activities that can neutralize the effects of the stress hormones themselves. Cortisol, adrenaline have a very negative effect over the long term, and one of the biggest effects that they have is a decrease in the production, or resulting in a decrease in production of key neurochemicals like dopamine and serotonin and a molecule called brain-derived neurotrophic factor. These molecules are there for our cognitive integrity, our emotional stability, our focus, attention. And when these stress hormones are elevated and they're flooding and overwhelming our system, unfortunately, these molecules are compromised. So we need to choose activities like aerobic exercise. We need to choose being in environments where we can activate and increase their intensity, their production, their uptake, and their dynamics and behaviors within our neurological set, within the brain itself. And this would include not only aerobic exercise, but sunlight, certain foods like green tea, cacao. These are very powerful tools that can facilitate this rebuilding and repair process.
The last step, and then I just had to interject there, Richard.
The last and most important step in this is the ability to be resilient, to be agile. And this time that we're in is not a time where we can be built and fixed on old ideas and old notions. We have to be agile. We have to be adaptable. And we have to be willing to move, recreate a template for ourselves, for our lives, and for our futures.
And so many people are wedded to the old way of doing things, and that's certainly not going to be a mindset that will get you through this period of unprecedented change. Just on a concluding thought around the panelists at the moment, Judy, for me, mental health has always been a stigmatized issue. You don't talk about mental health in the workplace. We have a very kind of machismo type of culture in South Africa. You know, cowboys don't cry. And so mental health has never really been discussed around the boardroom table. Do you think COVID-19 will finally destigmatize mental health enough so that we can start employing some of the techniques that Richard Sutton is talking about?
It provides an opportunity to reframe the way in which you as a company deal with mental health, because whilst disability is always seen as the person in the wheelchair and the person who is cannot see, this is an opportunity to say now, in terms of labour requirements to record and employ people with disabilities, it does provide us with an opportunity. My closing comment, I think, is to shareholders and to company C-suiters. This is the time where you really need to ensure that you understand your worker. What is the universe? What is the community that your worker comes from? It's all well and good to talk about the CEO who's jogging in the morning. The reality is that the hundreds and thousands of workers in South Africa are not working from home to the business day viewer. They are at home. They are unemployed. They cannot go to work. So the manifestation and the expression of mental health in the suburb is not the same as in the shack. And if you are in business and you are a leader, this is the time for you to dig deep into your own value system, your understanding of what it is to be a leader, your ability to be compassionate, your ability to be caring, and your ability to open the door. Because the average C-suiter in South Africa does not know where Sheshanguve is, does not know where Orange Farm is. So how do you even begin to understand the mental health condition of your workers if you don't know where they live, how they live, and what their lived reality is? In conclusion, it's the double shift for women. It is the night shift becomes the day shift becomes the night shift. And so the impact once again plays itself out, and women are there bearing the brunt of the disease yet again.
Now, hopefully it will build that level of empathy that we so sorely need in the most unequal society on the planet. Cassie?
I think, you know, starting conversations like this is incredibly important. We're not going to solve it in one interview, and it's a conversation that has to start on the next Zoom session, the next boardroom meeting, the next conversation that an unemployed person or even a CEO can start. Having these conversations are key, because mental health was important before COVID. Now, especially during this time, to really provide support and resources. It's so important that we have these conversations, share where people can get help, and take the next steps forward, especially because COVID's going to be here for a long time going. If mental health is left untreated in the workplace, it has a severe impact on the bottom line, productivity, absenteeism, presenteeism. For those that a month ago had a job who are now standing in a queue waiting for a food parcel to feed their child, I think we have to understand that every South African is affected by lockdown. And if we don't come together and start having these important conversations, we're going to be in even bigger trouble months to come.
And we'll be facing that second triage tent, as the World Economic Forum alluded to earlier this month. Professor Stevens?
So I think that this gives us an opportunity to really rethink the way we come at mental health. And as colleagues have already indicated, I think we're going to require a set of interventions at an individual level. I think Richard's already spoken about that. Cassie's spoken about that. At an organizational level, I think we're going to require engaged, transparent leadership that tries to not only flatten the curve, but flatten the hierarchy. You're going to have to think about how you optimize teams and how you really build a collective in business in a way that allows one to think about the business as a shared space, as a co-owned space, but also to act decisively in leadership when one is required to act decisively. And then lastly, I think that we're also going to have to think through the possibilities for a new social compact between government, employees, and employers in a moment where clearly issues like health, benefits, working conditions, PPE are all being surfaced and illuminated. And this is really a moment for us to recalibrate the social compact between government, labor, and business.
Yeah, certainly Yoni Mouton put the issue of mental health on the shareholder agenda when he came out so bravely. I think COVID-19 is building on that, a very important conversation that we've just started. Professor Garth Stevens, thank you very much. Thank you to Business Force South Africa's Judy Nwakwedi, as well as Richard Sutton, a stress expert of some repute, who's also the author of The Stress Code, and Cassie Chambers, the head of SADAG, with their insights into self-care, which isn't weakness at this time. It's actually part of your responsibility to yourself, your team, and your organization and your country as we battle this pandemic and its myriad effects. And if you feel that you need help at the moment, go out, reach out to SADAG, speak to a friend or a colleague, or contact Business for South Africa for some guidelines on how to deal with this.
This is Classic Business on Classic 1027 in Johannesburg and Fine Music Radio in Cape Town.
That's a wrap from the Classic Business team tonight. Thanks, as always, to sound engineer Matabataba Radebe and producer Andries Mahlangu for holding the fort back in the Houghton studio. I'm missing you guys. I'm going to leave you in the hands of Maestro Richard Koch in Johannesburg and Kia Netze in Cape Town. Good night.